Thanks everyone for joining us today. I'm here to talk about Precision Optics Corporation. I'm Joe Forkey, the CEO. As the name implies, we are an optics company or a technology company. Everything we do has something to do with optics. We do a lot with imaging, and a little bit with laser communications and those sorts of things. We're vertically integrated, so we do everything from the conception stage all the way through to mass manufacture. I'll tell you more about that in just a minute. We have a number of very specific areas within optics that we specialize in, which I'll tell you about. The markets we work in are medical device or healthcare, as well as defense aerospace. We've been around for a long time. Since the early 1980s, we put together an updated business model about 10 years ago, which is described here. As a technology company, we develop core IP. That is really the value that we provide to our customers. So we develop this core technology. Again, I'll tell you in a minute what these technologies are. And then we show these technologies to our customers. If we and our customer agree that our technology can enable their next generation product, then we'll engage with that customer. We'll design our technology into the specific product with the specific specifications that they need, the specific size they need, the specific performance that they need, all based on our technology. As we do that through the product development. So our technology is very small optics and very small optical systems. And an example is that we make an endoscope that's small enough to go through a blood vessel to go into the heart so that the surgeon can watch the inside wall of the beating heart while they're doing cardiac ablation. That's a very specific example, and I'll show you more of those as we go. Yeah, sure. The critical part for us is that we get paid for doing the design work. So we get paid on a time and materials basis when we're doing the design work to convert our technology into the product design that our customer needs. They pay us for it, but we insist that we maintain ownership of all of the IP. So when we're done, the product is owned by our customer. We can't sell that same product to someone else, but all the IP that enables that product is still owned by POC. That's critical for a technology company like ours. Once we get the product through the product development and we have a design that satisfies our customer, they've done their testing, the FDA has approved it, the Defense Department's approved, whatever it is, then we roll that product into production, the manufacturing phase here. And the way the company grows is that by putting more and more programs through the product development cycle and getting more and more programs into manufacturing, once the products get into manufacturing, because we're in medical device and defense aerospace where products tend to stick, where our customers are averse to risk associated with changing products, the manufacturing of the products tends to continue for many, many years, sometimes many decades. And so the company will grow by having the product development group act as a pump to take our technology and design more and more products to go into manufacturing. We're at an inflection point right now in this quarter that we're in now. We've talked about this publicly on our earnings calls, that we expect the highest revenue ever for this quarter at $6 million, which is a $24 million run rate, in large part because we have two programs right now that have transitioned from the product development phase to the manufacturing phase, two of our largest programs now in manufacturing in the history of the company. This is our revenue ramp over the last 7 or 8 years. You see we have a very nice ramp that was running for a number of years. We did a couple of acquisitions in there, but most of this was organic. You see that in fiscal 24, it's a June 30th fiscal year end. You see from 23 to 24, we dropped down a little bit. This was a couple of legacy products that went end of life. But importantly, you see the gray bar here, which is the product development group, right? The engineer, the revenue we get on a time and materials basis for doing the design work, that continued to grow. And that's critical because the engineering group turning our technology into specific products for specific customers is critical for the long-term growth of the company. So this is really a leading indicator of the production revenue, which is the blue part of the curve, which again, we expect to turn the corner and to recover the growth rate that we were seeing here before we got into fiscal 24. So just to be clear, fiscal 25, which will end at the end of June, will be about flat year over year, but the last quarter of fiscal 24 will be at a rate that's equivalent to $24 million, and that will recover this upward trend that we saw for many, many years. All of the work that we do is based on these three core technology areas. So optics is a very broad area. We can't do all optics for everyone. We're a small company. So we focus on three specific areas. The first one is micro optics. We make individual optics as small as 50 microns. This is the width of a human hair. And those of you here in person, I'm happy to show you afterwards some examples of these very small optics. You have to have an eye loop or a microscope in order to see them. That's how small they are. But we can make these very, very small optics. And then importantly, we can design and we can manufacture entire systems that are made out of these very small optics. So this is a picture here of one of the world's smallest cameras. This is a camera that's about 1 millimeter in diameter. It's small enough to go into the heart, the example I gave you before. It's small enough to go into the eyeball, small enough to go into the urethra, into kidneys. This is the ability to manufacture very small components, design very small systems made from those components, and manufacture those systems is one of the core technologies, which is micro-optics. The second core technology is in the area of 3D imaging. This is actually broadened a little bit recently into what I would call ultra-high precision. So 3D imaging is really a subset of the ultra-high precision. 3D imaging was used predominantly for robotic surgery. We did the very first 3D imaging endoscopes for Intuitive Surgical many, many years ago for their Da Vinci system. The technology that came out of that can continue to be used for 3D imaging, but today we're seeing applications for customers who want to go from high-definition systems, HDMI systems, to ultra-high-definition endoscopic systems or 4K systems. That relies on the same kind of technology that's used for 3D imaging. At the end of the day, it's an ability to design and manufacture ultra-high precision, diffraction-limited endoscopes and imaging systems. The third area that we focus on, and this was bolstered significantly by an acquisition we did about three and a half years ago of our competitor called Lighthouse Imaging, is in the area of digital imaging. And the idea here is that we're using, with our partner OmniVision, the CMOS sensor technology, which was developed for commercial applications and consumer applications like cell phones and laptops, to be able to digitize the images that we generate with the optics that we can make so that we can carry the images through endoscopes or through other systems as electronic signals as opposed to optical signals that have photons. And there are a number of benefits to doing things with digital imaging. What are our markets? So these three technologies can be used in a number of markets. As a small company, we're very focused not only on the technologies, but also on how we use our marketing dollars. We have a very small marketing team, although it's bigger than when it was me and one other guy, right? We focus predominantly on the medical device market because that's where we see the greatest value. I'm going to tell you in a minute that there are defense aerospace applications as well. And we're, as we expand our marketing team, we're going after the defense aerospace more and more. But where our headquarters is in Massachusetts, we have an engineering team that also is in Maine, near Portland, Maine, and we have another manufacturing group that's in El Paso, Texas. The medical device market can make use of these technologies in these ways. So micro-precision optics, I already commented on this. Smaller imaging systems allowed surgeons and doctors to go to places in the body they just couldn't go before. That example of the cardiac application, if the endoscope is too big, it doesn't mean you just have a slightly larger incision size. It means you can't get through the blood vessel, you can't do the procedure, right? So this is really enabling technology for places in the body where the incision size is critically important or where the physiology requires that the size of the endoscope be as small as possible. The 3D endoscopes and really ultra-high precision I already talked about can be used for what I call whole-body robotic surgery systems. There are also a number of places that we're looking at now and even some programs we started that use augmented reality or virtual reality in order to be able to overlay images of a visual image and a fluorescence image, for instance, right? Also, I talked about ultra-high definition in 4K images would fall into this category. The third area of digital imaging provides two real benefits to the endoscopy market. So the first benefit is that the digital imaging, the CMOS sensors that we use, have better resolution and provide a better image than the more traditional technology, which was coherent fiber bundles for flexible endoscopes. So this can create better images, and so the entire endoscope market is really transitioning from some traditional technology to digital imaging technology because you get a better image. The second benefit of digital imaging is that we can reduce the price of the individual endoscopes so we can get to a place where we can provide the endoscope to the surgeon, they can use it once and then discard it. And so this is so-called single-use endoscopes or single-use endoscopy. The real benefit there from a safety standpoint is that you don't have to worry about sterilizing the endoscope between using it on the first patient and the second patient. And while sterilization techniques can be very good, they're never 100%. And so there are cases where patients have died because they've contracted another disease because the endoscope wasn't fully sterilized. The FDA has been after this for a long, long time. The industry now recognizes that this is viable from an economic standpoint and from a technology standpoint. It turns out the hospitals really like this because they don't have to keep track of an endoscope that has to be cleaned and sterilized and sent out to the manufacturer to repair and all the rest. Instead of it being a piece of capital equipment that they have to keep track of, it's just like a scalpel. It's on the list of inventory or it isn't, right? So the hospitals really like it for that reason. The surgeons love it because every time they open up a single-use endoscope, the image quality is the image quality of a brand new device. When you use reusable devices that are sterilized, you'll sterilize it for 500 cycles. You don't know until you open it in the operating room whether or not it's going to be good enough. I've actually been in an operating room where they brought in three endoscopes, and I asked them, why did you bring in three endoscopes? You're only using one. They said, we don't know until the surgeon opens it in the sterile field whether or not the image is going to be good enough, right? So the surgeons love this because they get a brand new image with every procedure that they do.
Are they, So
colonoscopes are moving to digital imaging for sure. I don't know that they're moving to single-use endoscopes, and the reason is because the functionality of the colonoscope is significant enough that you can't reduce the price to the price point that you need. I think it'll get there, but it's not quite there yet, right? So basically, just to clarify that a little, the entire endoscopy market, for all intents and purposes, is moving from traditional technologies to this new digital imaging technology because you can get better imaging and you can get lower price. There's a subset, which is a significant subset, that's moving in addition from reusable scopes to single-use scopes. The thing that's determining whether or not you can go from reusable to single-use is what I just said. If the rest of the endoscope is complex enough that you can't get the price point low enough, it'll continue to be reusable. But we see this move from reusable to single use when we look at the growth of the markets. The estimates on the growth of the medical device or endoscopy market is something like 5 to 7% year over year, compound annual growth rate. The growth rate of the single use endoscopy market is 2 to 3 times that, 15, 20, 25%, depending on who you talk to. And that's because everything is moving to single use that can. So I haven't seen colonoscopy go to single use yet. I think eventually it may, but today it's a lot of the other scopes that are moving there first. As I mentioned before, as a small company, we have to focus our marketing dollars in the area that we think we have the best opportunity. That's medical device. But we do have a number of defense aerospace customers who have seen what we're doing, and they have come to us. And so as we grow, we'll start targeting the defense aerospace market more. But we have a couple of programs already where customers have come to us. The reason they're coming to us in large part is because of our small optics, right? And so anything that's lifted off the ground, there are benefits to making optical systems that are smaller and lower weight, right? In fact, the Defense Department, the defense market has an acronym for this. They have an acronym for everything, right? And this acronym is SWAP, size, weight, and power. They want everything to be smaller size, lower weight, and lower power. And we can help them with that because we have very small optics and very small optical systems that we can design. The areas that we see that there are applications for this, the first two have to do with the fact that you're lifting things off the ground. So one of our key programs that we're working on right now is in the area of satellite communications. In particular, satellite systems that use lasers for communication need very small optics, and they need very well-aligned optics. And part of the requirement for our micro-optics is that we be able to align them very precisely. We can translate that into the applications that are needed for satellite communication. Drones, for obvious reasons, is expanding dramatically. Having smaller size and lower weight systems for drones can be very beneficial. The third area here is directed energy weapons, more specifically laser weapons. Without getting into the details of the technology, there are a class of laser weapons that require very, very small optics in order to use fiber lasers, and so we can make some of these very, very small optics and there are applications here for that technology as well. On the digital imaging side, it's critical to our customers. We have a number of customers who have told us they've come to us specifically because of this, because we are horizontally integrated. So we can do an entire imaging system. And I mentioned before that our acquisition of Lighthouse Imaging, one of our competitors about 3.5 years ago, has rounded out our technical team with the electrical engineering requirement that's necessary here. So we can do an entire imaging system now. We're responsible for the entire video train, if you like to think of it that way, from the point where the customer plugs the system into the wall to the point where they get the HDMI cable coming out the other end. And this is really critical for our customers because they don't have to have multiple suppliers that they have to talk to if there's an image with their video, or an issue with their video. The digital imaging part of our business is one that we've been working on for quite some time. We started working with OmniVision, which is one of the world's largest CMOS manufacturers, about 10 years ago. We have a great partnership with them. But over the years, what we have discovered is that it's sort of obvious as we look at it in hindsight, but what we've discovered is that when we take our technology and we design it into a specific product for a specific customer, many of the components in each one of these customers' products is the same. At the end of the day, the outside envelope is going to look different depending on whether you're using this endoscope to go into the brain or to go into the urethra or to go into the heart. But the electronics on the inside, by and large, are going to be very similar. So what we've done over the past year and a half is we have taken our core technology, looked at the designs that we've done previously, and identified the common elements and designed a starting design or a platform design that we can now use for new customers for digital imaging that does a number of things. Because we're using design elements that have already been used, it reduces the overall cost because we're not starting from scratch. We're starting with the design that we've already started with. The second thing is it reduces the risk. A lot of the design elements now have already been validated, have already gone through the FDA testing, so the likelihood that the design we're making for the new customer is going to have a problem is much lower. And then thirdly, which is probably most important, it reduces the time to market. And we like that because remember the design, the business model, we want to get programs through the product development process and into production. Our customer cares about that because they want to get to production as fast as possible, right? So reducing time to market is really critical. We've launched this Unity platform in January, February of this year. We already have a number of customers who have come to us asking about it and wanting to engage with us on a program specifically because we have these platform designs with the benefits that I just mentioned. So this is a new part of the business. It's a new sort of benefit or a new addendum to the technology that we have, and we're quite excited about this, and it's having a great impact on our product pipeline. In addition to being horizontally integrated to be able to do all the different technological aspects of the program, we're also vertically integrated. And what I mean by this is we can take a program with our customer from the design phase, even before that, from the conception phase. They can come to us and say, we want to see this thing, you know, with this incision size, tell us what the design has to look like, tell us what the specifications are. We can take a project from that very, very early stage, all the way through the design, through the verification, through the validation, through the testing for the FDA. We have a group that gets on the phone with our customer, with the FDA, to discuss, you know, issues that the FDA has, all the way through to mass manufacture. This is attractive to our customer because they know that they have a partner that's going to be able to support them from the design phase all the way through to the mass manufacture. One-stop shop, right? So this is another part of what's unique about our company as opposed to other competitors. This slide I really like because it demonstrates the entire business model and gives a good representation of the things that we're doing. This slide shows the programs that we're working on now that are in product development or have gotten to production. So you see these are the different phases of the product development process. These programs are in production. These programs up here are legacy products that have been in production for decades. Okay. If you looked at this product development pipeline a year ago or 2 years ago, it would look similar, but all these lines, all of these arrows would be back here because we were still developing the products. Okay. So today, we have all of these products now in production. These two products on the top here just went into production in the last 12 to 18 months, and these are the two programs that are driving the top-line revenue growth because these two programs are larger than any we've had in the past. Our goal is to have programs that are in the engineering pipeline, enough programs in the pipeline so that we'll have 2 to 4 programs come out of the pipeline, go into production every year, at a starting rate of $1 to $3 million a year.
When were you founded?
We were founded in 1982. And there's a long history to the company I'm happy to talk to you about afterwards. This business model and this approach to running the company has been in place since I took over as CEO about 10 years ago. It took us a little while to get the technology going, took us a little while to get the first programs through the product development pipeline. Now we're at an inflection point because these programs are going to drive the revenue in the production side to a higher level than we've ever seen before. Yeah, so it depends a lot. So it depends a lot on the complexity of the system and whether our customer has done any work on the system yet.
And are they financing it?
They finance the whole thing. We don't do it. That's critical to this business model. So they finance it, and it's a profit center.
And they keep the IP.
And we keep the IP.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, you were listening. Yeah, that's great. The customer owns the product. We own the IP. Right. The answer is the timeline will be anywhere from 6 months to 2 or 3 years, and the cost can be anywhere from $500,000 to $2 million, more or less. The two large orders that are really creating this inflection point, I want to talk about just briefly. One is a single-use cystoscopy program. This is a program. This took about 2 years to develop, and our customer is a customer that has a robotic surgery system that's used for treating benign prostate hyperplasia, BPH, which is a very quickly growing market. It's a cystoscopy surgery system. They have an existing product in the marketplace. They just launched their new system in the fall of last year that uses our endoscope that we designed specifically for them. This is a single-use product, which I talked about before. The order they gave us for this product, they gave us about a year ago, is a $9 million production order. That's the largest production order we've ever had. And you can see that this will run over 2 to 2.5 years. So we have a significant backlog here. It's the largest backlog we've had for an order, again, in the history of the company. The second program is an aerospace program. This is one that supports communication between satellites, which relies on the micro-precision optics that we have, and in particular, the critical alignment that we can make between optical elements and optomechanical elements. This is a program that we've been working on for a number of years. It actually went into production about a year and a half ago, but it really started ramping about a year ago. We finally signed a main purchase agreement with this customer. This is a very, very large customer. Everyone would know their name. We negotiated this main purchase agreement for about a year. A lot of it had to do with the IP, which we were successful in negotiating. In this main purchase agreement, our customer has agreed to provide at least $4 million in purchase orders every year. We expect it will be much higher than that. Our backlog today is about $6.5 million. We just, on both of these programs, we just doubled the output on the production lines in the last 4 to 6 weeks, and this is really what's driving the increase in this quarter.
Where are your products made?
So we make the products in Maine, Massachusetts, and Texas. We'll source components from anywhere around the world, but the critical value-added parts of building the final assembly, the sub-assemblies and the final assemblies, which add the most value and also contribute most to the regulatory and quality requirements, those are all done in mostly in Massachusetts and in Texas. The go-forward strategy is pretty straightforward, so we continue to expand the production lines, particularly for these two specific programs. We continue to advance the pipeline programs into production. Again, I said 2 to 4 programs in, every year, which we're on track for this year and for next year. Expand the pipeline by bringing new programs into the pipeline. The Unity platform is accelerating that process, which is great for us. We can expand the number of engineers we have. Maintain competitive advantage. So because we own all the IP that's developed during the development process, we can continue to improve and innovate with our customer helping us pay for a lot of this. We will continue to invest in sales and marketing because our sales and marketing team is growing. We have more we can do in defense aerospace, for instance, and in our engineering capabilities. Our engineering group is really the limitation to how fast we can run programs through the engineering pipeline and into production. So we want to continue to expand that engineering capability. With all the growth that we have, we need to update our facilities to support corporate growth. We just filed an 8K yesterday. We'll have a press release in the next couple of days about a new facility that we just signed a lease on in Massachusetts, in order to be able to increase the production capability and also get closer to Boston, where we have a greater talent pool for engineering to continue to recruit more engineers. We also signed a lease on a new facility in Maine, moving that facility to South Portland, and we signed a lease in Texas in the facility we have down there. So continuing to expand these facilities is critical. And then finally, I did mention in passing, we did a couple of acquisitions over the last 5 to 6 years. We're not a roll-up strategy here, but there are opportunities in the marketplace. And so as we find more opportunities, we'll continue to do acquisitions as it makes sense. I see that we're just about out of time. Very quickly on the financials, I talked about the revenue growth dropped back, but we'll expect that to go up again. Gross margins have been in the 30 to 40% range. We expect these to grow as we increase the volume in production and better utilize the production overhead. Same thing for adjusted EBITDA. You see we've been up and down here. The EBITDA was significantly negative in fiscal 24. You'll see it's significantly negative in fiscal 25. This is because of the investments that we made in order to support the expansion in production that we saw coming.
What's your market cap?
Market cap today is about $35 million. Finally, on the balance sheet, the only point I want to make here is that at the end of March, we had cash and cash equivalents of $2.5 million. We did a financing in February with existing shareholders, straight equity at a 20% discount to market. So we've got the capital that we need in order to continue with the business model and the business strategy that we have. With that, I'll finish up. I think we're right at 3:30. We've asked questions during the during the time, so I think we're good. Thanks, everyone. Great.
We set up an on your roadshow for you guys.
Be happy to do that.
Okay, well, okay. I'll reach out and we can try to set up a time.
Okay, sounds good.
You.